we might have some up and down quarks. We could have as many of these doublets as we like. Put in those. So a complete list would be R alpha, not A, F, I, and as many of these doublets as we care to put in. If we need it, we'll make an alpha. So we have those tensors. Then the action, we're going to build out of tensors. Why do we build the action out of tensors?
They're measurable things.
Well, they're measurable things, yeah. So there's the things we want to make predictions about, but there's a mathematical reason, too.
We know how to integrate them.
And the integral is, let's see, that's not quite.
Invariant.
Yeah. All right. It's easy, since tensors transform linearly and homogeneously, it's easy to build invariant quantities by using them. You know, you multiply them together, you know, at most you're going to get an overall factor. I'd be pretty good. The overall factors are going to go away. What you want to do, the integrand should be a scalar. Under SU2. Right. That's what your action should be the integral of. A scalar is invariant under the group. So we can write products of any tensors we like. There may be some indices floating around. Now we can track off all the indices using invariant quantities. And the whole thing is a scalar. No free indices, so if we do an SU2 transformation, the action is unchanged, and SU2 is the symmetry of the action. Remember the first day, this was the goal.
Yeah.
Okay. So we may need more tensors. I forgot a couple. Well, yeah, let's see. What did I forget? There are two metrics that we have available. SU2 is a rotation group. A unitary group is defined by the fact that it preserves a Hermitian quadratic form. So there's some Hermitian metric on these signs. So H preserves delta AB, right? It's the identity. A unitary transformation can diagonalize it, you can renormalize your coordinates, and you can always think of the identity. So a unitary group in n dimensions, you have an n-dimensional Kronecker metric that is going to be preserved. Let's write it explicitly. So delta prime AB is delta CD HCA HDB, and that is right. And now it's a Hermitian thing. So one of these is actually a conjugate. Let's say an inner product of, you know, a phi A and a phi B. Okay. Inner product. And what I mean by that, let's take a real inner product here, psi B. You know, what we do is you take psi dagger A chi A, someone A. It amounts to just the Euclidean metric. All right, then if chi prime is H A B chi B, and phi prime is H A B phi B, that implies that the inner product of phi A prime with chi A prime is going to have an HH dagger. An H dagger is H inverse because it's a unitary group, and the result is the same thing we started with. This becomes, someone A, then we have H dagger on phi transpose, so we have phi dagger H dagger A, and we have H chi A, and the H dagger H is the identity, so this is equal to the original thing, phi dagger A chi A. So it leaves this Hermitian inner product unchanged because it's unitary. And that'll work for SUN. You'll have the same argument. A unitary transformation can diagonalize a Hermitian matrix, so any Hermitian metric you want to choose, you can diagonalize it using the symmetry group. And then you can also just rescale your basis to make it a unit matrix. Okay, now that's one metric. What's the other? Told you about this last time.
The killing metric,
yeah. So, also, the killing metric a couple ways to write this. We can just write structure constant I want this to be Kij. Let's say KIL for killing, CLJ, K for dick. That thing is symmetric because you can just interchange the C's and rename the indices and you get the same thing. So that's a symmetric quadratic form. And it is group invariant. And in the case of SU2, it's something simple. We have epsilon KIL epsilon LJK. Let's see, we're summing on two indices. Interchange two of these, interchange that one. So epsilon I, raise a K and an L, and here J, and then we have an LK down. So that's going to be minus Kronecker IJ. Trace gives 6, so we better have a 2. So let's define it to be minus a half this. An overall factor on the killing metric is just a matter of convention. So, if minus 2 Kronecker IJ is invariant, so is Kronecker IJ. So we might as well use the simple form. In that case, we can put a factor here. That won't hurt. How about a metric G alpha beta from the structure constant of the other part of the group? We have mu alpha nu C nu beta. And, you know, what do we get here? What are the structure constants for the translation group?
Zero, yeah.
Yeah, they were all zero. So you don't always get a killing metric. Your group has to be non-abelian for sure, and you're probably in good shape if it's a simple group. But you need to check.
Is it symmetric or not?
Yeah, it's symmetric. Yeah, small. Okay, invariant. And horribly degenerate, which I know we all aspire to. Okay, now I think that's 20 to write an action with. We don't have much else. That's really what we have to write an action with, so it's a good thing it's 20. What can we write? Okay. Let's see. We can put in our alpha, see what happens. Let's see. What was that? Yeah. Can we write something with our alpha? Try and write something involving R. What can we write?
Is that R the dollar we set to zero before?
Yeah. I haven't set it to zero yet.
Oh.
Any minute we'll set it to zero, we'll say, well, we want the torsion to be zero. We knew that all along. Let's finally set it to zero and solve that structure equation, and the answer is dx, and we're done with the manifold. But just for fun, let's see if we can construct something involving R alpha. So, there ought to be an R alpha there. As a 2 form, we need a 4 form.
Well, we got R alpha with R alpha.
Yeah, we could put. Now, since R alpha is d omega, if I put R beta here, that would be the same as that d omega alpha wedge d omega beta, which is d of omega alpha wedge d omega beta. So it's an exact differential, therefore integrates to a surface term. So r wedge r doesn't give us anything.
R wedge r of r.
So, yeah, let's put a dual in. All right, that's okay. We pretty much know what the dual does. R alpha wedge star R beta is going to be something like R alpha mu nu and then an R beta, rho sigma, and then we get a metric mu rho g mu sigma. Now, we don't get that metric for free. We've kind of got to stick it in by hand. It's not the killing metric, clearly. But in a pinch, we could use the Minkowski metric. Just put it in by hand. You have to do this in many cases, if you gauge the Poincaré group, you actually have to put in the metric by hand. The killing metric doesn't give you anything. In the standard model, you're usually gauging these things. You know, if you haven't used this quotient method to construct space-time, you can't even ask the question. You're just putting fibers on space-time and saying, okay, well, it's the space-time metric, so you just are assuming that in any case. In general relativity, there's no killing metric. In conformal gravity, there is. if you use the biconformal gauging, not if you use the auxiliary gauging. There are two ways to try and get general relativity out of a conformal gauge theory, and one of them gives a non-degenerate Killing metric. Only the biconformal one. So it's best to use invariant structures if they're around. If you stick something in by hand, you have to worry about what happens to it if you do gauge transformations. In this case, it won't be a problem if we want to stick in an A to alpha beta. So we could make this an A to mu rho, A to mu sigma. And we still have these two indices, so we're going to have to stick an eta on those as well. So something like that would be allowed. So we could put an action like that if we agree that we're just going to introduce the Minkowski symmetric thing. Now, let's see. I wonder what that gives. It's probably going to give us harmonic coordinates or some dumb thing. If we vary SR, let's see. Actually, what we get, when you vary something like that, you're going to get twice the variation of one R wedged with the dual of the other. It takes a little bit of work to show that, and that is either another good exercise or something I'll go through when we do a Yang-Mills field. It's not very interesting. This is not a very interesting case. I'm just playing with it. But what we have here is the variation of d of omega alpha. Remember, r alpha is just d omega from our structure equation. And that's the same as d of the variation of omega. We can integrate by parts using d of r alpha wedged star r beta is d of r of omega alpha is d of omega alpha with star r beta minus, because omega is a one form, omega alpha, or in our case it would be the variation del omega alpha, del omega alpha wedge d of star r beta. So what we have is d of del omega alpha, this wedge star. So I can write this term as the sum of the total derivative and that term. So I write this as twice the integral of d of everything inside and then plus this term. So we get del omega alpha wedge d star r beta, eta alpha beta. And this term is a surface term. And we take the variation of the connection to be zero on the surface. This term gives us our field equation. So if this was the only term we had, del SR equals zero would give us D star R beta equals zero. There'd be an eta alpha beta as well. We can just invert that off. So we get this. Now, that's the same as D of star of D of omega beta. And let's see, what is that? See, if we change I'm trying to think what that sort of half of a Laplacian. It looks like we would be asking for harmonic coordinates, something like that. Coordinates, right? Omega zeta. Let's see. Yeah, the for the star of it.
How can we tell? I'm sorry. A line above. How can we tell that's the surface term?
Oh, it's the total derivative of something, and so we can do an integral here to the boundary of the region we're varying. This is just a total partial integrated over some volume. You do one integral in whatever direction you happen to be. You know, this is a partial mu. There's a dx mu. So whatever direction you're integrating dx mu, you've got a total derivative in that direction, so you can do a full integral out to the boundary. Let me see. Alright, simplest example, integral of the gradient of a function, from x1 to x2 is f at x2 minus f of x1. There it is in one dimension. That's f on the boundary. Well, our variation vanishes on the boundary of the region. Now, if we have a bigger region, so we're doing a double integral of something like d of a one form, d nu omega mu. We're just doing Stokes theorem here. Stokes tells us that the integral over some volume of D of a form is the integral over the boundary of the form. So it's a straightforward application of Stokes theorem. There we go. So once you can write a term as D of something, you can use Stokes theorem. Little D, not big D. Of course, if it was a big D, it would also be a little D because this is a scalar. But then you can change it and then throw it away. I don't know what that does. You know, you can spend your spring break working that out if you want. I wouldn't attach any great importance to doing that. It's possible to write an action for the thing, and it would look like that if we introduced a metric. But let's go on to the more interesting terms. Instead, let's take R alpha to be zero. That certainly is a possible solution to the equation, even if we do have that term, R alpha equals zero is the solution. Right, so d star r beta equals zero. One solution is r beta equals zero. Not the only solution, but that was it. Then, from our Cartan equation, recall we had d omega alpha is r. We're setting that to zero as a solution to the system. That says d of omega alpha equals zero. So omega alpha can be written as d of some functions, x alpha, we take those functions as coordinates, and now those are Cartesian coordinates on Minkowski space. And we've constructed our flat space on which we want our SU2 gauge theory. So, how do I know this is Minkowski space instead of, say, Euclidean 7 space? Just to pick a strange example. Trick question. Too tricky. All right. The easy part. How many translations did we start with? T4. So it's a four-dimensional space. So now how do we know it's four-dimensional Minkowski space instead of four-dimensional Euclidean space, or some four-dimensional thing with two times and two spaces. What makes the difference there? It's by fiat, right? We could introduce a metric by hand. All right? It could be any of those. It could be any of those. There's no particular reason from the group theory that we need to say, oh, obviously Minkowski space. We say, oh, obviously Minkowski space because we want Minkowski space. We could just as well say, oh, I want Euclidean space and make it Euclidean. All we know is it's a flat four-dimensional space. The rest of the structure we're going to impose by some other means because we haven't specified enough in the group to give us any indication what it should be. In those terms. Okay. Let's write the interesting stuff. Now that half the people are gone. Neil and Jake. Oh, okay. Oh, only a third. We got lots of people left. Okay. Well, the spinner fields. We know what I can write for those. We started with presumably a Dirac action summed on A, and that's what gave us the invariance in the first place, or if we can regard the electron and the neutrino as having the same mass, which is a bit of a stretch, so we could get the local or the global invariance by writing phi a dagger d flash with a Kronecker minus a mass matrix and phi a. So that certainly has the global SQ2 invariance that we might have started with. As we make that local, we need to introduce the covariant derivative. So we have phi a dagger, the SQ2 metric, a covariant d slash, where D, I had it written on the board before, is what we had written on the board before. Put in our mass matrix and phi D. And we integrate that D4X. D4X, all right, that's the same as epsilon alpha beta mu nu, omega alpha wedge, omega beta wedge, omega mu wedge, omega nu. All right, as a form, that's what we're integrating. Sorry, let me do this. Which, if we choose those Cartesian this way, then they're the same thing. The Lebesgue is the anti-symmetric symbol. So, we can have as many of these as we want. We could choose, if we weren't out of alphabets already, we could choose to add several terms like this. So, how about sigma? Suppose we have sigma equals 1, 2, up to n. And we put a sum on sigma equals 1 to n. We can have as many of those as we like. What would they be? Sorry, what? Yeah, too many sigmas.
Yeah.
What's another? How about a capital
sigma?
You like it?
Yeah.
Okay. It's an uppercase Greek index. Of course, so is capital A. Yeah. I once tried to learn Cyrillian and Hebrew alphabet, so I had enough,
katakana and hiragana and, you know,
learn enough alphabet to have enough letters to write in between.
Would you use aleph, though?
What's that? Aleph
is
kind of... Oh, aleph. Oh, aleph would be good.
Yeah.
Shall we come over aleph? Yeah. They're like six. We're not going to use many of them. What would they be physically? Why would we want more than one of these?
If you're talking about
SEC,
maybe?
Or no. Well, actually, yeah. now that you mention it, we could introduce an SEC tree that way, but no, without introducing more symmetries,
okay.
How many representations, how many doublets, weak doublets, can you think of? How many do you know? Okay, how many there?
Oh, I think there's three. Okay.
Yeah, there are three lepton doublets. We have the electron neutrino, that's a doublet.
Right.
We have the muon and the muon neutrino, that's another doublet. We have the tau and the tau neutrino, a third doublet.
Right.
Who can tell me some more?
Well,
that's three doublets. Okay. Well, we've got their antiparticles. There are three more.
Okay.
Oh. Although the antiparticles actually included, that's the dagger. So, we already have the antiparticles. Never mind.
We have W and Z?
No, those are the gauge particles. Those are the A's.
Okay.
So, the field strength for the W and Z, I've erased it, is CF.
The
field strength for W and Z. Can't think of any more spinners? Do they come in pairs? Had it on the board earlier.
Up and down
quarks. There we go. Okay. There we go. The quark pairs.
Oh.
Up and down quark. That's a weak doublet. The charm and strange quark. Another doublet. Top and bottom quark. Or truth and beauty. For those of us who were around in the 60s, truth and beauty. three quark doublets. And they match the lepton doublets in number. There's a reason for that. It comes from Feynman diagrams. By having equal numbers of quarks and leptons, you get some things to cancel. You get neat cancellations between certain terms in your series to make things converge better. So the six doublets that we might reasonably want to introduce, let's go ahead and take one to six. Put them all in there. They could all interact via these gauge fields. Then what did we have left? F's the interesting one. What do we write for F? Certainly one map in there. What else?
You want omega, right?
No. It's just like R.
Oh, F star. Sorry.
Yeah. I want an F and I want a star F.
Oh, okay.
And this one works rather nicely. Okay, that gives us a 4 form. In n dimensions, it would give us an n form. So, you know, this will work in any dimension. And we need to contract off the IJ. We have a non-zero killing metric. Happens to be the Kronecker delta. But the group actually gives us this one. It's there. We don't have to introduce anything by hand to do that.
What would you use the killing metric better than the regular metric?
What regular metric?
Oh.
Okay, so we're talking about the Lie algebra. Right, Lie algebra is a vector space. Is there a norm on that vector space, an inner product on that vector space? You tell me what other one to use, we'll try it.
Oh, okay.
Right. The one that is there, if there is a group invariant metric, is the killing metric.
Okay.
Right. And So, and we have one. It's Kronecker, I guess.
Okay.
So,
what are the three families that have neutrinos? The tau, electron,
and muon, and
muon.
Tau. Okay. Should we add an F star F? An F wedge F? What happens to that? Does that do us any good? And we saw before that star F wedge star F was the same thing as F wedge F, up to a constant. They were proportional. We could add something like that. And it never does anything interesting. It's a topological invariant. In gravity, it's called the Gauss-Binet invariant. But it's... here, I'll show you what happens.
The topological invariant? Does that mean that it will vanish somehow?
It is Z of something. And, all right, here's a challenge for you. Can you prove that it's Z of something? Now, that's a tricky problem. A tricky problem. Remember the expression for F. Right. F itself is Z of something, but then there's a bit more going on. It's also got, how do we write this? Epsilon JKI. Was it plus or minus a half? A J wedge A K. Was that our field term? Minus. No, I guess it is plus. It is plus. Okay. is that the right expression, Nathan? Did I get that right? Look at the structure equation. There's a minus a half structure constant. A wedge A, and I've brought that term to the other side of the structure equation, making it positive. But I think we're okay.
Yeah.
Now, so the tricky thing to show that thing is a total divergence is you substitute in F, you square it out, you get a sum of four terms. You got to go one.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're winding down.
I'm leaving the country.
Really? Where are you off to?
I'm in the Republic, so I need to start.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 I mean, you see how it is. You know, people wander off when they have to. So,
thank you.
So you're off. Have a good trip.
Bye.
Bye. So the first term is not hard to show. DAI wedge DAJ, you know, that's going to be D of something immediately. But the cross terms and the term with four A's in it, you've got to fuss around with those to see what happens. But you can show explicitly that it's D of something. You know, or, here's the easy way, vary it. And if I vary Fi wedge Fj delta Ij, what I get is twice the variation of one of the F contracted with the other F. Okay, no big surprise yet. But the variation of a curvature that you get from these structure equations is always D of the connection. Covariant D of the connection. And then integrating by parts that covariant derivative, it vanishes by the Bianchi identity. So it's integrability that kills this thing. Let's see how that goes. So the variation of F is D of the variation of A. And then here we're going to get two terms, and those two terms are the same. So we get an epsilon JKI AJ wedge del AK. I'll let you fill in the detail to get rid of the half. But I claim both terms give you the same factor. The half goes away. This is an important half, folks. The half here means that F is not a covariant derivative of anything. The half has gone away here. That means this is the covariant derivative of something. In fact, it's the covariant exterior derivative of del A. If you try to make the curvature the covariant derivative of something, you get a very trivial geometry. It doesn't work. So if I make that substitution, then what we get is del of Fi wedge Fj.